mirrors are a magical implement of great volatility and risk, I feel. Do you agree?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I would agree.
What are some of the risks of mirrors in your view?
I think the risks of mirrors are manyfold. A lot of them have to do with the fact that a mirror is as much a weapon as it is a gift of insight, of illumination, of reflection. All those things which can liberate, emancipate, or free us, help us witness and see things as they are things which can be used to manipulate, delude, and destroy things as well. Especially, I think, the way we see ourselves, or maybe in relationships, the way others see us too. And that way, I often think that, and as I've said many times before, especially within the context of Libra, which is appropriate for our day of recording here, that the mirror is also always a blade.
Mm. Do you use mirrors in a risky way in your own practice?
Often not intentionally, but I have been known not infrequently to do so accidentally. I think we have to recognize that everywhere a mirror is, and we can be a little bit loose with this interpretation. We can mean a glass mirror, but we can also mean a window. Sure. Or a pool of water, right? Anything that a reflection can be caught in. Well, all of those are always doorways. All of those are always entrances and exits, places that spirits, energies, songs, ideas, feelings can move through, in and out. And when they're allowed to tarnish or to grow dirty or to become neglected, well, you know, what happens when you let a hole just start to grow inside your house in the wall, right? Things come in, or things might leave throughout it, and then we start to get into the tricky part of having to clean up for ourselves.
Mm. Do you think that a person can be a mirror?
I think that everyone is a mirror.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I do.
Is it a particular posture that a person takes on to be a mirror to another person, or is it something that's just part of our nature that we're always doing?
I think it is something that is harder to do intentionally, and it is often something that we do inadvertently. And I think it's not even something we do consciously, maybe, or always actively. When you think about a therapeutic context, right, and I have this background in counseling psychology, we would talk a lot about mirroring the client, right, to help them see themselves. And that's a really active and intentional thing to do. It's contrived, and therefore it can be useful, but it isn't always activating in the same way. I think the times that people are mirrors where it is most efficacious, where it is most affecting, and oftentimes in a painful way, right, is when it is just us living our normal lives and going about our business and reflecting back through that action, unprovoked, something in someone else that they then project upon, right? Mm-hmm. Or elicit some sort of memory or nostalgic reaction, or showcases some behavior that they aren't able to metabolize within themselves because it hits too close to home, or it's annihilating to their own authenticity in some way. And I think those are the ways in which we are most often mirrors. It is not usually a compliment when someone refers to someone as a mirror. We only think mirrors when they show us the fairest of them all, and that fairest of them all has to be us, right? We do not think mirrors when the mirror suddenly says, actually, you know, Sally Ann down the street, she's really the fairest of them all now, and you're looking a little jealous. So, yeah, I think that mirrors are beautiful, especially the gilded ones, right? And they're dangerous, and I don't think anyone's ever been thanked for being one, especially in the day-to-day, and not for hire.
The reason I was getting into the person as mirror so quickly is because you are someone who works one-on-one with others as a channel or medium or diviner for them. And that background of maybe more, I don't know, blank clinical therapeutic work is a very interesting contrast to that role to me. Do you see them as Absolutely. Different in respect to the mirroring function?
Absolutely. I believe when I believe that my role as a diviner when it comes to mirrors is the one who is gazing into the pool, who is doing that sort of scrying, that seeing, and oftentimes that traveling in through the mirror to these other worlds where I am then describing, elucidating, identifying other entities, spirits, experiences, legacies, traumas, etc., that are caught up within someone's spiritual ecologies and landscapes, right? In a clinical context, you are not supposed to be describing, telling, saying anything, right? That's the mirror as a tremendous and terrifying expanse of ice or polished slate or darkness with no light in the room, reflecting back all of the things beneath the client's conscious mind, allowing them to come to the surface, a blank slate that something can be thrown at, across, without responding, so that the individual is able to address it, you know, more conscientiously, more head on. Mm-hmm. It's very, very different work. And while I think the therapeutic skills I learned from a clinical training and education are very useful in working with the very tender world, right, of divination, I think I would be a very unpopular diviner if I took a clinician's approach to that type of mirror work.
Sure.
It's mirror crossing as opposed to being the mirror, right? Oh,
mirror crossing. Yeah, well, I was thinking about your readiness to use the divining pool, the reflecting pool, as a mirror, and you know, I'm struck by that imagery because it's a place to see sort of beyond the diviner sees things in the pool that the querent may not see.
Yeah.
So that's not an equal reflection, right? Or is it the diviner's eyes that have sort of special sight that are seeing things that that someone else gazing into the mirror can't see?
You know, I think it's a little bit of a six of one, half a dozen of the other, and then maybe a few other things too, right? Because even the most prodigious diviners and seers I know go to other diviners and seers for help understanding and recognizing what's around them. When we look in a mirror, some of us, the very lucky ones, look in the mirror and are like, oh yeah, I'm fucking hot. I look great today. Like, look out, world. Many of us get stuck in a sort of dysmorphic cycle of like, oh my God, when did that wrinkle come here? Oh, like, are jowls coming? Like, we have these really intrusive thoughts that cast doubt on our capacity to just see ourselves fully, right? Mm-hmm. And I find that translates a lot of times to our ability to see our spiritual ecologies, our spiritual courts, our spiritual kind of worlds, and spirit worlds, and other than human spirits accurately a lot of times, because it's hard for us to acknowledge that we could possibly be loved by things so spectacular and strange. Other times, because maybe we think that they should be more spectacular and strange, right? We have so many projections and feelings we cast upon them. Having objective eyes where we don't have a horse in the race allows you to see yourself or others much more clearly. That is something I find to be very distinct about the role of having someone else gaze for you. Now, you should never allow that person who's gazing for you's eyes to be the be-all, the end-all, the totality of what that experience is. But they should be able to be sort of lanterns in this own darkness that we often have hard times navigating ourselves.
Okay, I'm really becoming compelled by this idea of the chain of, like, the ongoing chain of observing and reflecting from one person to the next as a sort of healed alternative to the stupid, like, exact reflection of the mirror but maybe the thing that people look to for reflexive assurance. And there's a much more richer, to use the word you used, ecology available in sort of looking beyond the mirror. Another device that relates to the mirror that's coming to me here is the phone. And you know, the metaphor of a mirror has been used for the phone in popular culture already. You know, I'm thinking of Black Mirror as a title of a dystopian show about technology. Yeah. A lot of people gazing into the Black Mirror looking for something to be reflected back to them. And something I think you and I really have in common is this kind of tortured relationship with the things gazing out of the Black Mirror at us. And yet here we are sort of trying to bring people beyond the like dumb reflection of themselves and into that ecology that you describe.
Yeah.
What do you say to the gazers into the Black Mirror these days?
I often try and remind them that it is the Black Mirror's job first and foremost, not to show truth, but to incite emotion, to gain response or feeling, right? That is specifically when we're talking about the phone as Black Mirror, right? And the things we engage in there, where there isn't the depth of a face-to-face interaction, right? There isn't the corporeal intimacy. And so we are left to fill in the blanks, right? Which is one of the biggest dangers in any kind of scrying practice. Not just stating almost clinically what you're observing, but to start to extrapolate, to imbue meaning or subtext or color or quality where it isn't inherently there. And we do this all the time with the phone as the Black Mirror, where we are assuming that someone is vague posting about us, or we are looking at someone post something wishing we had done it first, and then we're having a litany of feelings that are built out of some false pretense of competition, and so on and so forth, right? The Black Mirror is showing us things that'll make us feel things, will cultivate, curate, excite pathos. It doesn't mean that it's truth, right? And one of the things I've often found myself recommending, the same way you should be cleaning your literal Black Mirrors made of obsidian, right? That you keep from the clandestine, you know, expanses of sunlight that may tarnish them. You should also be spiritually and energetically cleansing the Black Mirror of your phone, literally the screen, right? And this is a practice I haven't seen a whole lot of people talk about, but it's something that I started experimenting with whenever I felt that I was being sucked into the Black Mirror without consent, as opposed to gazing at it. So that's one of my biggest pieces of advice is cleansing spiritually the literal surface of your phone, putting different types of sigil or phylactery within the case as well to protect it, consecrating the phone to a familiar or well entreated for the project spirit who's willing to look after the phone and make sure things don't come through and from. Because if you're a witch, you know, one of the things you know is that evil eye is all over through the medium of social media, through text, even from friends, even from colleagues that you trust. And having certain ways of mitigating or eliminating the reflective quality there means that we are less likely to receive it, but we're also less likely to give it. And that's something we don't talk enough about, is the way in which we splinter parts of the emotional core off from our heart and shove it through the glass mirror of the phone into someone else as well. So you're protecting yourself, but you're also protecting others from the way in which the mirror tricks and speaks as much truth as it does lies simultaneously.
If this is too like abstract of a question, I'm happy to try and nail it down a little more. But the two words that I want to hear from you about are projection and distortion.
Yeah.
And I feel like those are both words that get used with respect to the internet, to like the Black Mirror, by spiritual people. Projection makes its way to internet discourse via like more sort of core academic psychology concepts that you might have some insight on too. And it strikes, projection strikes me sort of as the opposite of reflection also, right? Like reflection is two way, projection is one way, and maybe that's the difference. And so I'm interested in your thoughts on projection, but I want to tie it to your thoughts on distortion, which I'm also thinking of in terms of the, like the grime on the mirror that you've talked about as something to be constantly wiping away.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, trying to disentangle all of my psychodynamic background also from words like projections, where we start getting into a lot of really interesting and really important complexes to understand if we're going to be relational and social people. I mean, there's such a emphasis, right, on relationality these days. And there should be. What's more important to being a human than having relationships? But also what's more challenging to identity than having relationships, right? And that's where we find the sort of crisis of projection, whether that is from a self-sabotaging instinct or where it is antithetical to that and we're actually trying to convince ourselves, right, in some grab for security or safety that things are a way they are not. It is really easy, and this is a thing that I see and I encounter a lot with clients, where we're going into these comparative places, right? There's a lot of overlap between projection and comparison, because we are comparing ourselves to projections, not to real people, not to people that are also depressed on a couch sometimes, but just happened that day to be posting a photo of them from several months ago where they're happy at a beach, right? Not from articles written by people that sound like experts, because it's a job to sound like experts, not to be experts, right? It's easy to fall into the projection trap, and mirrors let that happen. We can trick a mirror, right? We can trick a mirror. We can learn angles. We can find edges. We can paint it in a color that is going to be more complementary. And that's where distortion gets woven into this complex as well. I think the key to mirrors is the key to working with all trickster spirits, is that you can't just rely. You can't expect them to be speaking truth or showing the true thing. That is why the relationship becomes important. That is why we need other people to reflect things back to us that are not simply the reflections that we witness, we perceive. When we are constantly setting little sailboats of hope and desperate connection off throughout the weird fiberglass networks of, you know, of the internet and of the strange but vast worlds that exist within the black mirror of the phone, it's so easy for them to be pirated by other agendas. And there are litanies of classes of spirits that feed off of our emotional dysregulation, our interpersonal distress, our feelings of isolation and loneliness. When we contact a mirror, when we come into relationship with a mirror, we need to remember that that first and foremost is also a relationship with both the self and the other. And if we can find some sort of harmonious dynamic, if we can find some way to understand that the mirror doesn't have to be, like we talked about, this stupid or superficial shallow pool, but rather it is an entryway, a doorway, a sort of black hole into a completely other galaxy of reality and existence, we instead take power back into our own hands, and we can decide to deliberately change what we're looking at in the mirror. We can take control or sovereignty back over our reflection and how we perceive and receive ourselves. And that is when we, I think, get out of the projection trap and start to turn it on its head so that we are projecting new realities into our own lives.